Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, March 28th. I'm your reader, Glorietta Foley. Let's take a look at the weather. Today's weather looks to be a high of 48, low of 36. Plenty of sunshine today. Expect a full day of sunshine with an average relative humidity of 45% and good drying conditions. Clear to partly cloudy tonight. Average relative humidity 60%. Very windy tomorrow. Warmer with plenty of sunshine. Expect a full day of sunshine. Tomorrow looks to be 68 for the high, 35 for the low. Now let's take a look at the stories on the front page. Center of the page, Dola dolls bring joy to dementia patients. At the bottom of the page, no time for journalism, boys just type. And to the right of the page, rare muscles alter river project. We'll start with Dola dolls brings joy to dementia patients. It started with Kaylee Cervelli's Grandma Dola. Kaylee's mother, who works at the same Northwood nursing home where Grandma Dola lives, told Kaylee that her grandma had taken to complaining about another resident and how she was neglecting her quote-unquote baby, and that it needed to be taken away. Grandma Dola has dementia, a loss of judgment and memory that makes functioning in daily life difficult. And it was clear she thought the doll the other resident had was real, according to Kaylee's mom. That's when Kaylee made it her mission to get her grandma a quote-unquote baby of her own. There are not many studies that have been done on the effect of doll therapy on long-term care facility residents with Alzheimer's and dementia, according to Kaiser Health News Story. But some has shown it to reduce anxiety and the need for medication. It is controversial in that some experts believe the use of dolls infantilizes the patients more than the therapies like music or art or puzzles that encourage critical thinking. Patients become more communicative and are more likely to engage with others, according to a book written by Gary Mitchell, a nurse who has looked at the studies on doll therapy and who works with Alzheimer's patients on a daily basis. His book, titled Doll Therapy in Dementia Care, Evidence and Practice, examines both sides of the issue. Kaylee Cervelli wasn't thinking about the clinical aspect of her desire to find a lifelike doll for her grandma. She just wanted to make her happy. So she got her a doll. The transformation was immediate and beautiful. Grandma Dola, who could become frustrated and anxious, a common effect of dementia, was more calm. Her mood changed. She smiled. Quote, they feel like they have a purpose again, end quote, Kaylee said. And that got Kaylee thinking. If it worked for Grandma Dola, who else would it work for? Kaylee's mother has worked in nursing homes for most of Kaylee's life. As a result, she grew up in them. Quote, we used to go to the nursing home where mom worked and we'd run around like we owned it, end quote, she said. Quote, we'd talk to the residents and play games with them, end quote. The experience stuck with her, as did the importance of engaging with the elderly. So many residents spend day after day with no interaction beyond that of staff, Kaylee said. Quote, they're bored, she said. So Kaylee started soliciting donations for dolls for other dementia and Alzheimer's residents. She created a Facebook page and named it after her grandma, Dola Dolls, to love through dementia. Word spread. Quote, it just blew up, end quote, she said. That was 3 months ago. So far, Kaylee has placed 50 Dola dolls in long-term care facilities, not only all over Iowa, but beyond like Kansas and Texas. She collects funds through her Venmo and PayPal accounts and posts the dolls she buys on Facebook page so donors know exactly what they purchased. The dolls cost about $65 a piece and are weighted exactly as a baby would be and are soft to hold. Some donors have picked out specific dolls to donate in honor of lost loved ones. Others have picked out dolls that look like a baby who died. Quote, another thing about dementia is that they forget about a lot of things, but they remember how to nurture, end quote, Kaylee said. Michael Davis, a minister for the IOOF home in Mason City, can attest to the success of Kaylee's efforts. One of her Dola dolls has taken up residence at the home. Quote, whenever I see that baby in her lap, they turn caregiver, end quote, Davis said. He said he's been the doll de-escalate situations with an aggressive resident and calm one who is disoriented and uneasy. With dementia and Alzheimer's patients, it isn't always easy to spot a trigger. Quote, it can be somebody walking around the hallways that they catch a glimpse of that reminds them of someone they didn't like. And they become argumentative. Or could be a housekeeping in an area that sounds the vacuum gives them anxiety, end quote, he said. But when the dog comes around, everything else around the resident goes silent, Davis said. Quote, the doll is amazing, end quote. Kelly's work on the dolls takes up every spare moment she has outside of working two jobs, being a hairstylist on the side. It doesn't matter. She applied to become a nonprofit and is in the midst of putting donation jars out at local businesses. Her next challenge is to find an item similar to her Dola dolls that she can put in the hands of male dementia patients. It's not that men are unable to nurture. Several of her dolls have gone to men. It's just that she thinks there might be something better out there. Quote, it's become such a beautiful thing, end quote, she said. Quote, it makes me feel so good to do it, and it's something just so simple, end quote. Our next front page story will look at the Rare Mussels Alto River Project, Winnebago River Dam Project shifts over endangered species. Mussels are invertebrates of many talents. Even underwater, these proud members of the mollusk polym family are capable of producing a kind of glue that can keep them stuck to almost any surface they need. When the time comes for certain mussels' youth to move, their parents can concoct a lure to con hapless bass into getting close enough for the young mussels to latch onto the fish and be carried to a new resting place. Once safely nestled in the locale, certain mussels, such as freshwater pearl mussel, can live anywhere from several decades to a century. If all of that weren't enough, mussels are also capable of altering plans for certain construction projects. Presently, Mason City is in the midst of doing mitigation work to three dams on the stretch of the Winnebago River that runs through town so that it can be more navigable for recreational use. But a segment of the work in East Park is having to shift due to the discovery of mussel beds that feature several state threatened species, including creeper, mussels, cylindrical paper shell mussels, and ellipsed mussels, as well as the state endangered species, the Ohio River pigtoe. Quote, what we have here is a pretty diverse assemblage of mussels relative to other interior streams, end quote, said Kelly Pohl, a mussels expert for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. According to Pohl, there are at least 11 species at one of the dam locations and 10 species at another. Quote, both projects have mussels in the vicinity, and we're really working with our river programs and the city to think through how we can minimize impacts and deliver projects Mason City is looking forward to having, end quote, she said. A chapter about dams, a river ecology from the Iowa DNR report found the mussels have been in precarious place in the state for a while now. Quote, in recent years, the story of mussels has been one of declining populations and potential extirpation of the number of species from Iowa. Unfortunately, they fall victim to a variety of today's stress on streams, end quote, the report laid out. Quote, stressors may include excessive and overly frequent channel scour events that relocate the animals to inopportune places or bury them under sediments, excessive nutrients, or low dissolved oxygen, and an inability to repopulate after events such as chemical spills, end quote. The Ohio River pigtoe, which was found in one of the Mason City beds, is one of the least 9 mussel species in the state that's considered endangered, along with the spectacle use case, slipper shell, buckhorn, Ozark pigtoe, bullhead, slock sandshell, yellow sandshell, and Higgins eye pearl mussel. Mussels endangerment is an issue in other states as well. A 2020 article from UNDARC, a nonprofit science publication written by Marion Renault, reported that, quote, more than 70% of mussels are imperiled or have been driven to extinction by pollution, habitat destruction, and other human-made hardships, end quote. However, certain mussels can return to concerted effort. A 2019 article from the Iowa DNR reported that in 1998, No live species of mussels could be found in Buchanan County's Lime Creek. The article said that in 2006, residents formed a, quote, watershed council, unquote, to reduce runoff of chemicals, salt, and silt. In time, they were able to reduce sediment runoff by 959 tons a year. Locals managed to curb phosphorus contamination by 1,500 pounds per year and drop nitrate nitrogen levels by 19%. In 2011, the Iowa DNR and U.S. Environmental Protection Agency officials discovered six species of mussels in the same creek where there once were none. It's not just the rarity that makes the in Mason City important, it's the functionality as well. Mussels such as the ellipse or the cylindrical paper shell work to consistently filter the water of certain bacteria and chemicals. If that weren't enough, they can also help stave off erosion. Quote, because mussels firmly anchor themselves to the lake or stream bed, they may actually stabilize the lake or stream bottom, thus minimizing the scouring effects of floods and wave action, end quote. A post from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources noted. With the actual dam work, Pohl said it would be important to not have a construction footprint landing on the mussel bed that could be achieved with minimal modifications. As for the mussels themselves, relocation might need to happen. Quote, in this instance, a relocation involves a very focused effort to collect animals from the riverbed. They're held in a safe manner and then repositioned in another area with similar habitat characteristics, end quote, Pohl said. The issue is something the Iowa DNR has seen around dams before. Quote, we've dealt with this on quite a few dams, end quote, said Glenn Harmon, a river program's environmental specialist for the Iowa DNR. Quote, a lot of times what happens around dams, it creates a rocky habitat, so we find mussel beds downstream of dams. The redesign cost itself totaled about $23,000, and Mason City Operations and Maintenance Manager Bill Stangler, who's overseen the project, said that that was covered by the Iowa DNR. The overall work on the Winnebago River Dam Mitigation Project will take some more time to finish. According to Stangler, two out of the three dams in the Winnebago still need to be mitigated. That can't happen until the project is fully bid out and the river is low enough to do the necessary work. Stangler said he doesn't expect that moving the mussels would significantly impede the project. Quote, it has no effect on one of the dams and a small effect on the other dam. End quote. When any mussels are relocated, Poole said, she plans to be there and hopes that it could be a learning experience for her and her colleagues. Quote, in this scenario, we're looking forward to collecting some additional baseline information because we feel like there's a potential to learn a lot about the habitat and river in general. That supporting a population like this and maybe having that inform other dam removal projects, end quote. All right, we'll continue today's reading with the last story on the front page. No time for journalism, boys, just type. Skipper's book, An Ode to Local Journalism. John Skipper says he's always enjoyed writing. Quote, as long as I can remember, I always liked to write. It was something that seemed to come naturally to me, end quote, he said. Quote, when I was a kid, my parents told me that they remember when I used to play outside, baseball or something like with the neighborhood kids, and I would call a timeout, and I would run in the house and get a pencil and paper because I had an idea for a story, end quote. As he got older, his interest in writing stuck around through college, where during his junior year, he landed a summer internship at a newspaper. Quote, one of the values of an internship is that it gives you an opportunity to decide whether this is for you or what you want to do for the rest of your life. And sometimes, I suppose, it can work in reverse, where you say, hey, I don't want to do this. But for me, it was kind of a confirmation. Quote, when I was through with the school, the same paper that I interned for hired me full-time for $70 a week, incidentally. He laughed. Skipper retired after 55 years in journalism, which included more than 30 years at the Globe Gazette. He still contributes columns to the paper. Recently, he released a book entitled No Time for Journalism, Boys, Just Type. The book began when his wife, Sandra, who passed away 3 years ago, was ill. Quote, in her final days, she was in the hospital here in Mason City for 4 or 5 days and was asleep most of the time, almost in a coma. And I was in the hospital room with her. said Skipper, end quote. Given the circumstances, he was hesitant to leave the room for even a short amount of time. Quote, you could leave for 5 minutes and something could happen. So a couple of days in, I decided to take a couple of legal pads with me to the hospital. And I thought, well, gee, I'll just sit around and think about something to write about. And I started thinking about some of the things that happened in my newspaper career and started sketching them down in longhand on a legal pad. When he'd get home at night, he'd transfer his notes to his laptop. Quote, it was kind of a therapy for me, actually, just to get away from the troubles and so on, end quote, Skipper said. Quote, it was something I could do to get out of that world for just a few minutes, end quote. After his wife passed away, he continued what he had started at the hospital. Eventually, what began on those legal pads became 77,000 words, a finished book. On the cover is Skipper circa 1965, about 19 or 20 years old at the time, facing away from the camera, fingers on a typewriter, a cigarette perched at his mouth. Inside the book is comprised of vignettes, which revisit moments throughout Skipper's journalism career. The incidents and events span myriad moments, from the Iowa caucuses, to murders, to fires, to drownings, as well as interactions with a variety of Iowans, including a state checkers champion, a tattoo contest winner, and a woman who converses with pets through mental telepathy, just to name a few. The title, quote, has a North Iowa flavor to it, end quote, said Skipper. Quote, it refers to the necessary nemesis in all newsrooms, deadlines, end quote. Tom Toma, a current Mason City Council person, worked at the Globe Gazette in various positions over more than 40 years, including a sports editor. On an occasion when deadlines for sports stories were looming, Skipper says Toma told his writers, no time for journalism, boys, just type. A review of the book from the Iowa History Journal said, quote, Skipper understands that the story, not the storyteller, is the focus of the reporter's work, end quote, adding that the book provides a, quote, behind-the-scenes look at Skipper's career that also tells a much larger story and that it serves as an ode to newspapers and the vital roles they play in the communities they serve, end quote. Skipper sums it up this way, quote, one of the things that motivated me to get out of bed in the morning for more than 50 years and head to the office was knowing that one story on any given day can make the difference. And maybe today will be that day, end quote. Copies of the book are available through www.johnskipper.com. We'll turn to the inside of the paper as a story reckoning comes this week for some Iowa legislative ideas. It's do or die week in the Iowa legislature. Friday marks the second quote-unquote final deadline, which means policy bills that do not involve budgeting or taxation issues must be passed in either the House or the Senate and clear a standing committee in the other chamber to remain eligible for further consideration this legislative session. There are some exceptions, but general issues that have stalled due to lack of support or lower priority status likely will find their way to the State House recycling bin by week's end, barring some 11th-hour maneuvering as lawmakers work in anticipation of adjourning by their April 30th target. Bills being shadowed by the legislative Grim Reaper include measures designed to ban most traffic enforcement cameras and faculty tenure at Regent universities, make daylight savings time Iowa year-round time, lower the penalty for possessing marijuana, bar employers from mandating COVID-19 vaccinations, override presidential executive orders, and sanction left-lane campers who refuse to drive in the slower lane of traffic. Quote, we're still trying to sort through all of these bills, end quote, says Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican Ankeny. Quote, and I still have members lobbying for or against all of those bills, so I don't feel entirely comfortable right now saying what's dead or what's alive. Some of these, when it gets to the last minute, it's because there is a resistance at different points, end quote. House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican New Hartford, said most of the majority GOP priority bills are advancing, along with Governor Kim Reynolds' initiatives to expand broadband housing opportunities and ethanol fuel consumption. But he had concerns. Some House passed measures to promote child care access and affordability have stalled in the Senate. And both he and Whitford wondered if longstanding issues around Iowa's bottle deposit law will see another year of stalemate. The deposit debate in the House speaker appearing on Iowa PBS, Iowa Press, said legislators are trying to quote-unquote force competing interests in the end the quote-unquote finger-pointing that plague bottle bill changes and negotiation a solution that may not please everyone. For instance, he said, if food stores don't want to deal with return empty bottles and cans, they may have to contract with other businesses to handle them, meaning that in those cases, consumers would have to go somewhere besides the grocery store to redeem empties. Quote, if anything is going to happen with the bottle bill, end quote, Grassley noted. Quote, the legislator has to make a decision what's best for our constituents when what's best for the long-term viability of the program and just go forward, and the folks in the industry may not love that solution, but at some point, we're just going to have to do it, end quote. Then there's the camera conundrum. Senator Brad Zwan, Republican Urbandale, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said he hasn't given up on the traffic camera ban, but conceded the prospects for Senate File 516 were not good to win full Senate passage and get through a House committee in time this week. The bill would ban automated traffic law enforcement cameras statewide, except the speed cameras around the S-curve on Interstate 380 in Cedar Rapids. Zwan said the same probability was true for other bills he had championed, ending facility tenure at Regent universities, making daylight savings time permanent, and allowing college athletes to be compensated for use of the name, image, or likeness. House members said they plan to take up legislation dealing with qualified immunity and other projects and protections for the law enforcement officers, but make changes to what the Senate sent them. The next one is the opposing view. Democrats, who are outnumbered 1832 in the Senate and 4159 in the House, expressed concern Republicans have embarked on a divisive agenda dealing with issues to expand access to guns, restrict access to certain health care options, and weaken public education with bills like the House-passed charter school expansion that is slated for Senate committee action this week. Quote, we still haven't seen any real COVID-19 relief move out of the General Assembly at this time, end quote, Senate Democratic leader Zach Walls of Coralville. He pushed for Senate approval of the House-passed bipartisan package exempting federal paycheck protection loans and grants to businesses and unemployment insurance benefits from state income tax. And lastly, generational ideas is our next issue. Whitford said the 2021 session is entering its final month with tax policies and fiscal 2022 state budget decisions moving front and center, with Monday marking the 78th day of a session slated to run 110 days. Quote, there is no reason that we need to go beyond 110 days, end quote, said Whitford. Quote, in fact, with the Republican trifecta, control of the House, Senate, and governorship, trying to push conservative ideas through the last few weeks, there's no reason we need to even get to 110 days. A lot of it will come down to that budget negotiation and, frankly, the tax conversation, end quote. Legislative Republicans expect to make a, quote, significant, end quote, investment in expanded broadband in Iowa. Grassley pegged it Friday at $100 million and finalizing a state general fund budget that will top $8 billion for the first time. Also, Whitford said the 89th General Assembly is putting forth, quote, a generational ideas, end quote, providing income and property tax relief, phasing out the state's inheritance tax while maintaining a, quote, very sustainable, end quote, budget with surplus reserves against the backdrop of a deadly pandemic. Continuing with hard news inside the paper, teacher union talks combative in Belmont-Clemmy district. The last two times the Belmont-Clemmy School District administration went to the bargaining table with the local education association, contract negotiations were contentious at best, said Superintendent Dan Frazier. That's why when his team presented its contract proposal to the EA team At a public meeting on March 23rd, it removed all non-mandatory items, leaving base pay as the lone item to negotiate. For that, the administration asked for a pay freeze for the third time in a row. Quote, "What we're trying to do is to improve employee relations by improving our ability to manage the district," end quote, Fraser said. It didn't go over well. Understanding how the BK administration can offer such a striped-down contract proposal requires a short history lesson. In 2017, after gaining the majority in both houses, Republicans pushed through changes to Chapter 20 of the Iowa State Code, which governs collective bargaining. The changes, which were challenged in Iowa State Supreme Court and upheld, were styled after a similar law passed in Wisconsin in 2011. They boil down to this: the only thing government agencies are required to negotiate with public unions is base pay. The only exception is for public safety unions. Anything else, including step or lane increases for longevity or education, holidays, overtime, sick or bereavement time, workloads, and employment hours, became, quote, permissive bargaining items, end quote, which means while they can be negotiated, they are not mandatory to be negotiated. The BK Education Association also made a proposal at that March 23 meeting, and it bore little resemblance to the administration's. It asked to maintain the language of the existing contract and its salary schedule structure. It also asked for teachers to receive retroactive pay scale increases, pay for longevity for the previous 2 years, it was frozen, and for the upcoming year. All of it became a moot point once the union saw the administration's proposal, said Jack Ickle, Union Serve director of the Unit 2 of the Iowa State Educators Association, who was helping with the negotiations. Quote, "I worked with 20 districts in this area, and I've never seen anything like this at any other district," end quote, said Inky. Teachers who spoke to the Globe Gazette under a promise of anonymity for fear of retaliation for speaking out said the district's move on top of the prior pay freezes has left them feeling devalued. Some claim the district is losing experienced teachers as a result. Data supplied by the teachers show 14 of the district's 48 teachers have fewer than 2 years ago experience. The district's finances do not appear to be an issue. Belmont Clemmie has an unspent balance, the amount of money the state allows the district to spend or its spending authority, of $1.8 million at the end of its last fiscal year. According to budget documents, the State Association of School Boards recommends a district maintain an unspent balance of 5% to 15% of its total budget. Belmont Clemmie sits at more than 18%. Those numbers and the proposed pay freeze left Inky and teachers scratching their heads. Under Iowa code, when the government agency and the union fail to reach the agreement, they must then submit a mediation. Should mediation fail, the matter goes to arbitration, where the ruling can either go in favor of the union or the government. In the case of the base pay, the only thing that can go to arbitration, if the arbitrator rules in favor of the teachers' union, it can only award the lesser of the two numbers, 3% or the current consumer price index for the Midwest, which is around 1.7%. Quote, "It's disrespectful, the pay freeze, because they know the number they're going to have to get to eventually," end quote, Inky said. Superintendent Fraser said he could not comment in detail because he is prohibited from doing so. But he said when the district left in all the permissive bargaining items, the last two items, and times the contract were debated, negotiations were contentious. Instead, Fraser said the district created a handbook and put all the permissive bargaining items, pay scale steps and lanes, overtime, holidays, personal time, into it. And what is in there is not substantively different from what the union was given in its last contract, he said. Fraser also disputes the notion that removing the permissible bargaining items from the district's proposal is uncommon. He cited the West Hancock School District as an example. Starting with the first contract after the code was changed, West Hancock remove all its permissible bargaining items from its negotiations, said Superintendent Wayne Cronenman. It wasn't a negotiating tactic, Cronenman said. It was for the sake of expediency. West Hancock also pulled all the permissible items into a handbook, and some things had been included by the district that teachers do not have and did not have before, he said. Quote, teachers were leery at first, end quote, Cronenman said. Quote, they were concerned that they were taking a bunch of things away and out from them. But they eventually saw what we were doing, end quote. Cronenman also noted that his district does still discuss some of those items in negotiations as needed, though. Fraser reiterated that the move wasn't made with ill intent. Quote, it wasn't our intention to maintain all these things that are in the handbook, end quote, he said. His team's next meets for a closed-door negotiation session on Monday. And that brings us to the midway point of today's Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, March 28th. I'm your reader, Glorietta Foley. We'll go ahead and move on over to our opinions section and see what opinions are out there. Today's opinion cartoon says, meanwhile, in the Suez Canal, there's a boat with the title GOP on the back. It also has voter restriction attempts listed on the side of the boat. And it looks to be like a storage container that you would see crossing the any ocean. It's currently blocking the canal as it is not going forward, backwards, or anywhere. So let's take a look at our letters to the editor. Our first letter, farmers are not big winners. Gobert, farmers and corn are the big winners. What about the $30 billion Biden isn't giving to the people that were destroyed by the grain diplomacy with China? That was their payback promise by Trump and designated for their suffering, not the bullcrap program it's rerouted to. Signed, Greg Heitleman, Clear Lake. Our next letter, I'm tired of political propaganda. We seem to be proud of not increasing taxes. I guess we should be proud of the old MCHS building sitting on the demolition list. Let's be proud of that depot that has been on the same list due to the lack of effort by the government over the years. Look around at the lack of support for the infrastructure in this city. The goal of the government seems to be to cater to big businesses through tax breaks and extensions of deadlines. Why do they even bother with the deadlines anyway? We seem to have a government that is so content to sit at their desk and collect their paychecks while Clear Lake has committed to a successfully completed hotels, shopping areas, and infrastructure maintenance. Maybe it's time to replace the city employees who are not able to successfully perform the tasks that Clear Lake employees have so well completed. Food for thought. Signed, Michael Rohde of Mason City. Our next letter, Republicans need to find a new focus. What the Republicans in Congress have been occupied with most recently is what could be called, quote, solutions searching for a problem, end quote. In reference to Trump's voter fraud problem that recounts and investigations explored, nothing was found except two dead guys in Georgia that voted, but they both voted for Trump. This is true. So Trump's panicked phone call to the Attorney General of Georgia was recorded by the AG and should be enough evidence to convict Trump of voter fraud. Trump said, quote, just find me 11,780 more votes. And on the third recount, which is the one more I needed, end quote. Trump lost by 11,779. So his math is good. This should be enough to prove him guilty and prevent him from ever running for political office again, plus jail time. All the other evidence is just quote unquote pile on. So now the grand old party is going to try to cheat legally by trying to limit voting for classes of voters that tend to vote Democrat by making it more difficult, especially the poor, elderly, and the handicapped and minorities, by having fewer polling places and more difficult to get to, reducing hours, no mail-in or early voting, etc. I had concerns about Biden also, but no more. The quality and experience of his selections for cabinets and White House staff have all been highly qualified and not based only on loyalty or politics. The daily press briefings are professional and accurate. No reporters are passed over, interrupted, ignored, cut off, insulted, or thrown out. Biden is too busy working and lets his professionals handle briefings. He also does not have time to tweet, watch TV, and play golf. How pleasant to see such efficiency and honesty in an important things getting done like COVID. That was signed Stephen Epperly of Mason City. And our last letter, prime the pump, economic works. Years ago, an economics teacher in Council Bluffs, Jefferson, stressed this, prime the pump. Even farming people know what this means. When things aren't going well and a well seems to have dried up, my grandparents had done it on their farm place. Prime the pump. Pour water into it to start water flowing again. Pour money into the economy to get it going again. The true $1 trillion COVID-19 relief bill was needed. That money will be spent over and over and over again 20 times. It will seem like $40 trillion. That will get the economy going again. When Republicans give tax breaks to the rich, it takes money out of the economy. Prime the pump is good policy advice to me. And that is signed Steve Russell of Clear Lake. All right, in today's opinion article by Alan Gubert, governors need to rein in big ag in their states. On March 1st, Nebraska's attorney general threw the book at Alt-N, alleging the 24 million gallon per year ethanol maker near Mead spent most of its last 5 years making an environmental mess of its biofuels plant and the surrounding rural community. In a 97-page civil complaint, the state detailed 18, quote, causes of action, end quote, against Alt-N, ranging from, quote, operating a solid waste management facility, end quote. Alt-N now is storming an estimated 84,000 tons of distiller grain on site, and the contained elevated concentrations of pesticide to discharge of a pollutant into waters of the state without a permit. As explained here last month, the allegations stem from Alt-N's unique ethanol business. In the sales pitch to potential customers last summer, it explained that it was processing 600,000 to 900,000 pounds of treated seed into ethanol daily, according to the Lincoln, Nebraska Journal-Star. That ethanol feedstock treated agricultural seed instead of using farm-raised corn, quote, created tens of thousands of tons of pesticide-contaminated byproduct, end quote, that the plant tried to rid itself of in what the state now alleges manners both legal and illegal. The state's lengthy date-filed complaint also serves as a second of unintended function. It documents just how neglectful Nebraska regulatory officials were in their duty to protect citizens and natural resources from the type of calamity now hitting Alt-N's rural neighbors. For example, according to the complaint, on February 14, 2013, Alt-N stated grain, mainly corn, will continue to be the primary raw material in the facility, will keep the ability to produce wet distillers grain and soluables for feed and animal feed. Two paragraphs later, however, the state confesses it, quote, discovered in 2015 that Alt-N was using discarded seed corn that had been treated with pesticides as its feedstock. However, it did not know until 2018 that the byproducts of Alt-N's ethanol production could contain measurable residues of pesticides, end quote. Even after what turned out to be a deadly 3-year lag to connect the environmental dots, the state still didn't act until May of 2019, when the state's Department of Agriculture reported the Journal Star ordered Alt-N to, quote, cease applying the solid byproduct of the treated seed as, quote, a soil conditioner, end quote. Simultaneously, the state issued the company a notice of violation that it was operating a solid waste management facility by storing the now unusable ethanol byproduct without a permit. And yet the plant continued to operate even according to the complaint, as Alt-N officials did little to comply with the state's demand that it address growing problems with nearly every system in the Mead facility. Growing piles of tainted byproduct, excessive wastewater, drainage, leakage lagoons, and incomplete records. Equally remarkable, the complaint doesn't explain who Alt-N is and, therefore, whom the state of Nebraska is charging with 18 different, quote, causes of action, end quote. It does note that the quote, Defendant Alton LLC is a Kansas liability company, end quote, and is, quote, registered as a foreign limited liability company in Nebraska, end quote. Also, while the complaint lists the amount of civil fines, many are $10,000 per day, Alton could be liable for, it doesn't explain how the fines might be assessed or when they begin. Equally important to many in the surrounding community is who will pay cleanup costs if the owners of Alton declare bankruptcy and walk away from the troubled plant and its dirty past. Al Davis, a rancher, former Nebraska State Senator, and now lobbyist for the Sierra Club, hears that question whenever the name Alton comes up in conversation. Quote, it's absolutely criminal what's happened in Mead, end quote, he relates in a March 22nd phone call interview. Quote, people have been complaining about the plant since 2017 and nothing was done, end quote. The state confirms that fact, too. Almost half of the 80 or so Alton visits by state environmental inspectors since 2015 occurred in January and February of 2021. All of which seem to point to a growing implied understanding between most state governments and big ag business. If we rarely check to see if the cows are still in the barn, don't worry about fixing the barn door. With that, we'll move over to our obituary section, starting with Beckett Allen Peterson. Beckett Peterson, 12, of Clear Lake, passed away Sunday, March 21st, at his home surrounded by family. Funeral services were held 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 26th, at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake. Burial followed in Clear Lake Cemetery. To view a recording of Beckett's service, please visit the Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel Facebook page. Visitation was held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 25th at Ward Vance Light Colonial Chapel. Beckett was born April 15, 2008, the son of Blake and Peterson and Amanda Truex in Des Moines. He grew up and attended school in Clear Lake, where he was currently in 7th grade. He had a love of music, including a wide variety of genres and artists, past and present. He enjoyed swimming, being on the water, wrestling, and roughhousing. Beckett had the absolute fullest life and found joy in every experience. He had a love for adventure and went skiing, sailing, four-wheeling, and loved to go fast. Beckett took great pride in being a Clear Lake Lion and could often be found at basketball practices or games cheering them on. The school fight song would always bring a smile to his face, and that smile, big and bright, often mischievous, filled every room he was in. Beckett brought joy to every person that met him and could win hearts over by giving his famous quote-unquote kisses. While we are heartbroken that he is gone, we are happy he is free of the tubes, meds, and pain that had made up his life. He is dancing in heaven and using the voice we had not yet heard in heaven now. Next, Mr. Roger Friedrich Hunold. Roger Hunold from Pleasant Hill passed away March 25th. He was born at the family farm home north of Littimer on July 7, 1933, to Paul Arthur and Anna Emma Burns Hunold. He was baptized and confirmed at Evangelical and Reformed Church of Rural Hampton. He attended country school at Hogan Independent School through 7th grade. After that, he went to Franklin Consolidated in Littimer. He graduated from there in 1951. On February 5, 1953, he was inducted into the U.S. Army, taking basic training and schooling at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. He then went to Korea and Japan and was honorably discharged on December 24, 1954, as a corporal. Roger was loved by all who knew him, and he will be very much missed. His secret to a long, good life was good diet, good attitude, and lots of love given and received from family, friends, and yes, even his pets. He enjoyed tinkering in his shop, gardening, and working on old tractors, and most of all, he enjoyed being a loyal Cubs fan. Next, Charles Nickel. Charles Chuck Nickel passed away Thursday, March 25th at Good Shepherd Health Center in Mason City at the age of 83. A memorial service will be held 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 30th, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel in Mason City, with Pastor Kathy Graves of Trinity Lutheran Church officiating. Committal services will follow in Rose Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be held Monday evening, March 29th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel. Next, Ms. Ramona M. Schmidt. Ramona M. Lau Schmidt, 92, formerly of Clemy, passed away Thursday, March 25th at Summit House in Britt. Funeral services will be held 1:30 p.m. Monday, March 29th at Emmanuel Reform United Church of Christ in Clemy, with Pastor David Bogard officiating. The service will be live streamed on the Cotaldo Funeral Home Facebook page. Burial will be at Ells Township Cemetery in Clemy. Visitation will be held 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, March 28th at Cataldo Funeral Chapel in Garner and will resume 1 hour prior to services at the church. Masks are required at both the visitation and the funeral service. Next, Ms. Elaine Severson Lenz. Elaine Lenz, 96, of Mason City, passed away Wednesday, March 24th at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice. Elaine was born May 19, 1924, to Newt and Alma Gunderson Severson in Belmont Township, the youngest of seven children. She was baptized and confirmed at St. Olaf Lutheran Church in rural Belmont, attended Rural School No. 9, and graduated from Belmont High School in 1940 at the age of 16. In 1942, she married Merlin Petten, and they were blessed with three children. They lived in Chicago, Riceville, and then settled in Mason City, Clear Lake area. She worked for Masters Chiropractic Clinic for 14 years. Following a divorce, she married Tom Lenz in 1976 of St. Olaf Church. After Tom's death, she moved back to Mason City. She was very proud of her Norwegian heritage and loved being with family and friends and doing many activities with her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Expressions of sympathy, cards, and memorials may be sent in care of Elaine's family to her daughter, Judy Bailey, of Mason City. Next, Mr. Richard Smith. Richard Lee Smith, 90, passed away March 22nd. A memorial service will be held at a later date at the Mason City First Presbyterian Church. Interment will be held in the Granite Falls City Cemetery in Granite Falls, Minnesota, at a later date. Memorials may be directed to Mercy One North Iowa Hospice or to First Presbyterian Church of Mason City. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Richard was an avid reader. He served as deacon and usher for First Presbyterian Church, and after moving to Mason City's Village Cooperative, he served on the co-op property committee and enjoyed cards and coffee with friends. His playful spirit captured the attention of many, including his grandchildren, whom he nicknamed Floyd, Clyde, and Henrietta. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory of Mason City. Next, Gary Allen Barth. Gary Barth, 67, passed away peacefully March 23rd at Bartles Lutheran Retirement Community of Cancer. Born October 22nd, 1953, in Decorah, he was raised by loving parents Harold and Helen Barth of Waterloo. There will be a celebration of life service to be held in the Chapel of Bartles Lutheran Retirement Community on Saturday, March 27th at 11 a.m. Visitation 1 hour prior to the service. A private service for family will be held at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery at a later date. Memorials and condolences may be shared online at the Gary A. Barth Group on Facebook or iowacremation.com. Memorials may be given to the family for distribution to one of the following: Bartels Lutheran Retirement Community, or Cedar Valley Hospice, or Wounded Warriors Project. Next, Ms. Arlene Van Saben. Arlene Elizabeth Van Saben, 98, passed away peacefully at Lutheran Retirement Home in Northwood on Saturday, March 27th. Funeral services will be held 1 p.m. on Friday, April 2nd at Connor Colonial Chapel in Northwood, with Pastor Becky Sog officiating. Arlene will be laid to rest at the Sunset Rest Cemetery with a private communal service. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service from 12 to 1 p.m. at Connor Colonial Chapel in Northwood. Arlene was born January 5, 1923 in Mason City, the daughter of John and Isabel Deirdreff. On December 6, 1947, she married Philip Van Saben at a Little Brown Church in Nashua. From this union, four children were born. Arlene and Pete enjoyed weekly dance parties with family and friends at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake. They also made countless memories with family and friends, with golf outings to Bella Vista, Alaska for many years, and Labor Day weekend fishing trips to Lake Osakis, Minnesota. The couple liked to travel intensively, including Europe, Spain, Holland, and many locations throughout the United States. Next, Ms. Meta Simmons. Meta Simmons, 96, of Greene, passed away on Thursday, March 25th at the Valley View Care Center in Greene. A private family funeral service celebrating her life will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, March 29th at St. Peter Lutheran Church in Greene, with Pastor Daniel Fluke officiating. Interment will follow at the Rose Hill Cemetery in Greene. A public visitation will be held before the funeral from 9:30 until 10:30 a.m. Memorials may be directed to the family. And lastly, Ms. Marcia Everett. Marcia Everett, 52, of Ankeny, passed away peacefully on March 22nd in the comfort of her home and surrounded by her family. Marcia was born August 13, 1968, the daughter of Bonnie Barton of Ankeny and Farrell Everett of Britt. A celebration of life will be held at Evergreen Cemetery in Britt during Hobo Days weekend on Saturday, August 14th, 2020 at 1 p.m. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Susan G. Coleman, Fight Against Breast Cancer. All right, that's going to take us over to our sports section as we look at a little bit of a NCAA basketball tournament. Unbeaten Zags hope to take next step. Creighton looks to upset over Bulldogs. Top-seeded Gonzaga has heard the resounding refrain all week. Four more wins to capture the school's first national championship. Four more wins to finish the first perfect season in men's basketball in 45 years. Even coach Mark Few couldn't resist, though he added some instructions: focus on basketball, maintain perspective, and ignore the chatter, as well as a warning. Quote, "There's a week or hopefully two left in the season," end quote, he said. Quote, "These guys are competitive and they're smart competitors, and they know from here on out that every team is more than capable of taking us down," end quote. Sure, Few sounds like a candidate tapping down expectations before at an election rally, even a small one that might be tempted to break out the, quote, "four more," end quote, chant during Sunday's West Region semifinal against fifth-seeded Creighton. Reaching this destination is hardly uncharted territory for the Zags. It's their 11th Sweet 16 trip, making it this far unscathed, 21-0, and as a double-digit favorite, certainly is different for a team that's routinely been serenaded with questions about whether it was as good as a record indicated. This year, nobody questioned the numbers or the nomination of the Zags have been demonstrated game after game. The Blue Jays, 22-8, don't, not after losing to the Zags twice in the last 4 years, 91-74 on the road in 2017, and 103-92 at home in 2018. Now with Creighton set to play its first Sweet 16 game since 1974, the Blue Jays believe they have what it takes to do what nobody else has this season. They, like the Zags, prefer playing up-tempo. They, like the Zags, spent most of the season ranked in the top 15. They, like the Zags, have an outstanding point guard. And Creighton plans to take advantage of the lessons it learned from those previous two losses to pull off the upset. Quote, "I think where teams run into problems with them is they play 32 minutes, 33 minutes, or they start the game comfortable, or they start to relax, and then Gonza goes on those runs," end quote. Creighton guard Mitch Bullock said, quote, "You have to stay locked in for 40 minutes and just keep coming and keep attacking. They're an unbelievable team," end quote. But maybe not unbeatable. While most acknowledge it's been less than fun spending so much time inside their hotel rooms, the NCAA versions of a bubble has allowed Gonza to stay more isolated from the media, family, friends, and fans, which could help them stay focused on completing a journey only seven teams and four schools in men's basketball have ever completed, none since Indiana in 1975-76. "All they need are four more wins," quote, "I thought there would be some teams that would do it before this," end quote, former Hoosier star Scott May said. Well, it's hard to do. Every game is important, and now, as you go down to the Elite Eight or Final Four, it gets even harder. But they've got an opportunity, so I wish them well and would welcome them to the club, the undefeated club, end quote. Then there's the USC versus Oregon. Southern California won one more game than Oregon this season and beat the Ducks in the lone head-to-head contest. The Ducks were still crowned Pac-12 regular season champs based on winning percentage. In Sunday's second semifinal, the two league rivals will meet again with something to prove. Quote, "I wanted this game in the Pac-12 tournament, and we didn't get it then," end quote, Oregon forward Eugene Aumarie said. Quote, "So I'm happy to get it now. I'm ready to go. We're all ready to come out and compete," end quote. What Aumarie remembers from the last or the first game, which USC won 72-58 on February 22nd, was the seventh-seeded Trojans' fast start and Oregon playing catch-up. The Ducks 21-6 never fully recovered during their fifth game in the 11th-day stretch. The game features contrasting styles. Six-seeded Oregon doesn't have a starter taller than 6'6" and relies heavily on three-point shooting. Southern California prefers a bigger, more physical lineup featuring the Mobley brothers, Isaiah and Evan, and don't mind mixing it up. It's how the Trojans 24-7 made it back to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2007, and now have a chance, or a second chance, to demonstrate that they are better than Oregon. Quote, "Look, it's nobody's fault that Oregon played two less league games than us. That's just the way it worked out," end quote, Coach Annie Enfield said. Quote, "They went 14-4, we were 15-5, and so the rules were the percentage would be decided, and even though they didn't play a full schedule, they had a great season. To us, they're a top 10 team in the country, and we're going to have to play our best to win." And that concludes the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, March 28th on IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service. I am Glorietta, your reader, and it's been my pleasure to read for you today. Coming up next, your first hour of the Des Moines Register. Thank you for listening and stay safe.